Hello, hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super thrilled you're here, and I am so excited about this week's guest. T. Morris is back, and you know what that means. It's going to be another really informative and really hilarious time, and it might go 5 hours, but hopefully not, because we both have days to get back to. Let me tell you about T. You've heard T. on the show several times. T. Morris has been writing science fiction, fantasy, horror, and nonfiction for over a decade. His first novel, Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Oksana, doggone it, I knew I would say Oksana. Let me try that again. His first novel, I know, right? His first novel, Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Oksana, became the first novel to be podcast in its entirety, ushering in a new age for authors. Podcasting. He went on with Ivo Terra to write Podcasting for Dummies, as well as the following editions alongside Chuck Tomasi. In 2011, T returned to fiction with the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series, penned with his wife, Pip Ballantyne. And somewhere in the middle of this, T and Pip have released the second edition of Social Media for Writers. T and Pip also host The Shared Desk, a podcast covering collaboration and other aspects of a writer's lifestyle. He enjoys that writer's lifestyle in Virginia alongside Pip, his daughter, and three cats. You can explore the works of T. Morris and his occasional geek rants at tmorris.com. But this time, he's back, and he's got a brand new project called Old Spirits. It's presented by Don't Turn Around and Imagine That Studios, and that's T and his friend and colleague, Phil Rossi, and they have started doing paranormal investigations. I'm so excited to talk about this with you, T. Welcome.
It is always a pleasure to be here. No matter how, and you know, very much like paranormal investigations, the time just flies by when I'm on the mic with you. So I am, if we go 5 hours, we go 5 hours. I mean, it is. Time is a very fluid thing, especially when you get into what Phil and I, what Phil has introduced me to. And it's just been a roller coaster ride. That's the only way I can describe it.
That's awesome. And just let's jump right on in.
Okay.
What is it that Phil has introduced you to? What are you doing?
You know, I get that a lot, especially from my family. in the opening of Old Spirits, which the pilot episode is going to be dropping on February 16th, it starts with you basically hear me say it all started with a video game. And that's true. During the pandemic, I got a phone call from Phil, and Phil was like, I got this brand new video game for VR. I know you don't have a VR headset, but I want to try it out, and I'll be in VR and you can be in your normal setup and we'll stream it. It's called Phasmophobia. And I said, okay, well, what's the game? And he said, well, it's a horror game, and that's all I know. And he also knew about it, was that you basically play a team of paranormal investigators, and you go in and you try to try to figure out what ghost is haunting this house, right? Mm-hmm. And you use everything that you see on the Ghost Hunters. You know, you've got gadgets, you've got clues to figure out what the ghost is, all these different things, right? But unlike Ghost Hunters, these ghosts are all aggressive, and they will hunt you. And at one point, the ghost can kill you, and then you become a ghost yourself. And that's where it started. September 27th, we started streaming Phasmophobia on Thursday nights, and it just became a regular thing for me and Phil. And Phasmophobia blew up. It is a huge video game when you find it on Twitch. And it's also incredibly fun with, if you've got a full ghost hunting crew of four. But while all this was going on, Phil started up a paranormal podcast called Don't Turn Around. And you can find that at philrossimedia.com/DTA. And he started doing interviews with people who were really into the supernatural, into cryptid hunting, into UFOs, and he wanted to offer them a safe space so that they could talk about their experiences. And I started listening. I love the podcast. It's a terrific listen. Phil's got a great voice. He's also a singer too. Like you, Isolde, Phil's a singer.
Awesome.
Little more bluesy. He's just got a great voice. So you can listen to him read a phone book and it's great. anyway, so Phil started doing the podcast, and he said to me, I've been interviewing all these people and I'm starting to feel an itch. I'm starting to feel an itch to try this out, T. So do you want to do this with me? And I don't know what it was that possessed him to say, pardon the pun, possessed him to say, do you want to do this with me? But I was like, yeah, sure. And I was in a really bad place mentally because at the time I was job hunting. I had been job hunting during the pandemic. So I needed something. And so Pip and I, that's my wife, Pip. She helped me budget the money so I could get one little ghost gadget just to try it out, see what it was like. And we went to the Belgrove Plantation where the pilot episode is set. And this is what I like to tell people about this whole experience since that July 26th outing. Have I set out to prove that the afterlife exists? Have I set out to prove that ghosts exist? No, that is not why I'm doing this. My thought was if I walked away with one EVP, which is also known as electronic voice phenomenon, which if you want to ask questions about that later on in the episode, we can cover that. But if I walked away with one EVP, I would have been thrilled. And I tell people I am not out. I have not proven by any stretch of the imagination the afterlife exists. Has some weird stuff happened to me on all of these outings? Oh, dear Lord, yes. And it's been such an adventure. And, you know, if someone were to say, well, T, did you walk away with that EVP after Belgrove? I didn't walk away with it with an EVP. In one room, I walked away with six. And that was something that when we featured that on the pilot episode, you've had an advanced look at it. So you know exactly which segment I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Just a crazy experience. And just when I think I've experienced it all, it just something else happens. And, you know, it's very tough for me to now watch the ghost hunter shows, the ghost hunter type shows, because they walk away with three EVPs and a couple of knocks and they're thrilled. And I'm like, man, that's a light day at the office for me. And I don't know what it is, but man, what an experience. What an experience.
All righty. This is cool. So here's the thing, right? You said you're not out to prove the afterlife exists. And we also, before we started recording this, we went, this might get a little woo. And that's okay.
That's fine.
So,
yeah, that's
cool. So what are you trying to prove, if anything?
Honestly, I'm just trying to prove, that there's a great quote, as you know, and I know some of your listeners who've heard me in the past. You all know I'm big on the Shakespeare, and there, if I'm out to prove anything, it's the quote from Hamlet when, I believe it's Hamlet to, Hamlet to Horatio when he says there are more things in heaven and earth that are dreamt of in our philosophies. And that's what if I'm out to prove anything, I'm out to prove that there are things that are far beyond our scientific comprehension. And I'm also out to prove that science can actually help us not only debunk it, but also kind of show that there is something beyond the realms of tangible science. And if I'm out to also prove anything, I'm out to prove that not everything that happens is a demon or a hostile entity. I think that, and I say this in the Meet the Investigator segment, there's a spectrum of ghost investigation. There's a spectrum of paranormal investigation. On one side, there is Zach Bagans and Ghost Adventures. On another side is Grant Wilson, Jason Hawes, and the Ghost Hunters. And I tend to lean more towards between Grant and Jason. What I respect about their shows is that they go out of their ways to debunk paranormal happenings. They try to debunk it. They go out of their way to debunk it. And I'm that guy on the investigation. I'm like, you know, like it happened this weekend. We were investigating a ghost town ruin in Daniels, Maryland. And both Pip and Phil's wife, Tina, were convinced that something was picking up and swaying this ribbon of bells that was at the abandoned cemetery. And I said, I feel a breeze. This is being done by a breeze. And they were like, no, you didn't see it earlier. And I'm like, I'm telling you, there is a breeze that's making this happen. And even after I filmed it, I said, yeah, nothing's picking that up and making it horizontal. And while the mind can play a lot of wild tricks on you, especially when you're in an area that is a little on the creepy side. And so, yeah, there are things that you just cannot explain away with science. But I do think it is just as important to go into paranormal investigation, which is a touch of skepticism and a touch of science, because that is going to help you try to debunk a lot of weird things that happen. A good example would be when Phil and I went to St. Albans, and while I was streaming the event, people watched as this plasma ball, you know, the plasma balls that you have where you put your hand on it and the electricity dances on your fingers and things like that.
Sure.
Well, I was using that at an investigation because it was a theory that if you put out the plasma ball, you're basically giving ghosts free energy and then they don't tap your equipment. And I wanted to test that at St. Albans because I knew St. Albans is a very active spot. And sure enough, I watched the tendrils get fewer and fewer and fewer, and then they just disappeared. I'm like, wow. And I was convinced, wow, the spirits drained it. But then I was like, I want to test this. I want to test this theory. Because I'd put a fresh set of batteries in this plasma ball, and I put the fresh set of batteries in the plasma ball at the beginning of the night. And this was we were there for maybe 3 or 4 hours. So the way it broke up was we had 40 minutes to investigate, 20 minutes break. So 40, 20, 40, 20, 40, 20. And I did session one, session two. And that's what I did. I would turn the, and this is when I got home. I turned the plasma ball on, let it run for 40 minutes, turned it off, 20 minutes. I did that 4 times, not a problem. On the 5th session, and that was where we lost all the energy out of the plasma ball, was the fifth investigation we did at St. Albans. On the 5th session, plasma ball was doing fine, and then it petered out 30 minutes in. And that was the point on the stream and in the investigation where the plasma ball went dead. And I was like, okay, that's been debunked. It wasn't the spirits. It was just Duracell. And that's the way I approach this. The other thing, too, is that if I go to any of these investigations, if nothing happens, and that has happened before in the past, there's been some places that Phil and I have gone to where it hasn't been that active.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is, hey, look, I'm getting to spend some quality time with my best friend, and we're just kicking back, doing some oddball paranormal stuff, but we're clocking in quality time, you know, and that's kind of the way I approach it.
That all makes all sorts of sense. And I really, you know, it warms my heart that you're going, yeah, let's bring a scientific approach to it, because one of my sort of credos is that yesterday's myths are today's science and today's myths are probably tomorrow's science. We just might not have the instrumentation to measure it well yet. And yet we took our little screenshot at the beginning before we started recording the episode, and you're holding up a couple of, as you put it, I have to have cool gadgets.
Ghost gadgets. Gadgets are the thing. Yeah.
So what, when you're doing this, you know, laying aside for the moment skepticism, because yes, I want to approach this with a skeptical eye. This wouldn't be my first paranormal investigation occasion, I will say. I was at one before, not as a participant, but as a speaker. And I saw people get so excited. They were running around with a whole bunch of different computerized equipment to different rooms in this haunted inn. And I want to know from you, what do you need bare bones to become a paranormal investigator? Because I can walk into some place that they say is haunted and go, I don't know, I don't feel anything necessarily. Right, right. But you have instruments that you use, you and Phil use, as part of the Old Spirits investigations. What are you using, and how accurate are these instruments in telling you what you're trying to find?
Well, for one thing, I would say this, because this was the lesson that I brought back from this past weekend. My buddy Phil and I, we went out with his wife Tina, my wife Pip, and we literally did a paranormal couples weekend.
As we called it,
couples weekend, paranormal investigation. You know, it was that kind of, you know, full on heavy metal. And we went to Gettysburg, and then we went to Daniels, Maryland. Mm. But at Gettysburg, I will totally own this. I was having some issues because I was so wrapped up in getting the gadgets out that I was missing. I wasn't in the moment. Mm. And while that does sound kind of woo, that's something that's the first thing you got to be. You got to make sure you're in the moment. And when I've got all my gadgets and I'm trying to stream this all at the same time, that's where everything just compounds one on top of the other. And so I was a little prickly at points of the investigation. And it wasn't until afterwards, the following day that I sat down with Phil. And this is the best part about Old Spirits is I get to be within close proximity of one of the greatest people on the planet, this guy named Phil Rossi. And I said to Phil, I said, I think I have a problem with my gadgets. I think I'm too wrapped up and too focused on making sure I'm using them. And he said to me, it's because you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth out of it. The paranormal field is one of the most expensive fields that you can, hobbies or whatever you want to call it, that you can get into. The two gadgets that you see in the screenshot are nearly $500.
Wow.
Together, mm-hmm. right? And that's why I tell people in the 5-Minute Paranormals, which are the mini episodes in between the investigations, we say, do not go into this full tilt. If you do that, and you don't even know if you're going to like it. And I'll get to that in a moment, but you need to make sure that before you start getting the bigger gadgets, you want to make sure that this is something you want to do. And I'm learning, I have to rethink my investments and go, okay, there are going to be times I will use these gadgets. There'll be other times I will use other gadgets. I don't have to use everything. Even James Bond didn't use everything at the same time in his Aston Martin DB5. So I have to practice a little patience. And that's the first thing that I would say as part of your arsenal in starting off with paranormal investigating is you got to be patient. This is like fishing. It is a waiting game. It is like hunting. It is a waiting game. So you have to be patient. Second thing is that when it comes to the actual gear itself, you need to make sure you have something that's recording whatever's happening around you. And for me, that is the Zoom products, the H1, the H2, the H1N, the H2N, the H4N. These products are fantastic. And the H1 is very affordable. The H2 is a little more pricey. The H4 is extremely more pricey, but all three of these get the job done. They are reliable digital recorders. Video recorders, that's another layer. And if you have it in your budget to get one video camera that has infrared capability, then you're ready to go. That's all you really need to start off with. Now, the gadgets that you see in the screenshot, those are literally from a place called Ghost Stop. And that is exactly a play what you think of as a play on, but it's Ghost Stop. And the one that I am the happiest to have right now in the arsenal is the one that's in the orange case. It's called the Eddy. It's called the Eddy Plus. And what I love about this thing is that it is the one piece of ghost gear that reads temperature, pressure, humidity. It also works as a geophone, so it picks up vibration, and it also works as an EMF reader. But that's not what makes it so cool. It does all these things at once, and then it records all the data onto a memory card. And then you upload that to a site, and the site basically breaks it all down and creates a graph. So you now have data that you can go back to instead of just documenting it by hand. It's all documented for you digitally. And then you can go back and you can compare, contrast, do all that stuff. And I love this thing. I first saw it in July, and then they went out of stock in August, and I waited. I literally waited until I was pestering the guy who made these things going, are you back online yet? Are you back online yet? Because of the supply chain. And when the supply chain righted itself or started to right itself, he was like, I'm back online. And I said, give me one. And even Phil has been like, wow, this thing is so much better than I thought it would be. So, but that right there is, that was, I didn't get that until right before St. Albans. And St. Albans was, I believe, our fifth or sixth investigation. Starting off, all you need is you need to have something that records the moment, whether it's audio or video or preferably both. And then the last thing you need, so you got patience, you got a digital audio recorder, maybe a digital video recorder if you got money in the budget, but the last thing you need is time. Because the investigation doesn't stop when you leave the site. Now you got to sit down and take all that hours of video, all that hours of audio, and you got to listen to it. And there are going to be points where you're going to be listening to silence. You're going to be listening to nothing. And when you get that first EVP, it is like winning that Texas Hold'em hand in Vegas. You're just like, I did it. And then you feel a rush and you're like, I want to do this again. It's a very addicting thing. It's very addictive. And I'm glad I don't gamble, because this is as close to gambling as I'm going to get. And
it's fascinating to me to listen to you talk about sort of being in the moment, in part because I'm vegan, so I'm not going to talk about fishing, but it's about, to me, it's about sort of a state of quiet preparation, if you will, mm-hmm. as you're in the middle of an investigation. So as this is the Innovative Mindset Podcast, first of all, I would love to know more about the innovative gadgets, but also the mindset piece. What do you do to prepare mentally and emotionally for an investigation? Like you went on a couple's weekend. That was great. but what did you do? What do you do to prepare mentally for having that patience, for being in the moment, for staying present, for making sure all of the things on your checklist, and I'm assuming you have a checklist of all the gadgets and preparing and the batteries and whatever. What do you do to prepare for all of that? How do you get set to go on an investigation?
When I prepare, I like to get into the history. I like to get into the history as much as I can of a particular place, a particular location, a particular event. One of the best examples is TWA Flight 514. That is at the top of my list right now, one of the most notorious places I've ever visited. And I'll get to that in a minute. but to prepare for that, Phil calls me and says, hey, this weekend we're going out to TWA Flight 514. Do you want to come with us? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, if you want to get ready for this, here's a documentary on YouTube called Diverted. And it is about what happened at TWA Flight 514. So I, settled in and I watched this documentary. And I found out when it happened, who was involved, why it was such a horrible event. Not just the loss of life, but why it happened. And it was one of those things that when I got out to the site, I was like, okay, I mentally have an idea of what's going on, who's out here, and if there is anybody out here, and of course, what I'm getting into. And that's the first thing I do, is I try to do some type of historical research on where I'm headed. Second thing I do is I go in with high hopes, but realistic expectations. Mm-hmm. Every time I go somewhere, I go, this is the time where I'm going to have the disappointing result. And I think I started doing that after, I especially started doing it after the Blackburn Inn, because I went to Blackburn with really high hopes and really high expectations. And I was a little disappointed at the end of the investigation. Some weird things still happened, but not where we were staying. It was the surrounding property, which can only make me assume that the folks at Blackburn Inn are not necessarily leaning into their haunted history. But I have a real funny feeling that the people at Blackburn, when they were renovating that space, they were smudging, they were saging, they were I would not be surprised if they were throwing holy symbols into the fixed wall patches, because when you actually got into the space, it didn't feel that menacing. Considering what happened there and the people involved, it didn't feel menacing. Oh, but when you got to the surrounding properties, it was electric. It was fully charged, and there was some serious malice going on there. But TWA was a very different experience, because I went in there knowing, and you know, physically and mentally, what to expect. And where it becomes notorious is throughout the daytime portion that we were there, I was getting hits off of the other device that's in the screenshot, this little triangle device called the Flux 2. And it was actually giving me responses to questions. There was some sort of intelligent entity out there, because I was trying to get as close as I could to make sure there was nothing setting off the motion sensors. I was double checking everything just to make sure that that there wasn't, bugs crawling on it or anything like that. And where I got my justification about how the Flux performed was the Flux was basically going off red, green, red, green, red, green. But when Phil and I came back at night, it only went off once. And while we were there at night, there was an entirely different vibe. And I have said flat out to Phil, we're not going back there at night. It was just one of those places and one of those experiences where I was like, we were not welcome there. We were not welcome there. And what's even more shocking about the TWA crash site, 200 yards away, someone is having a luxury home built there. Yikes. I would not want to be that guy if they've got their doggo and the doggo says, let's go for walkies, and it's 10 o'clock at night. No, thank you. No, thank you. And if they don't know what happened on their property, that's blissful ignorance, in my opinion. I don't get it. I don't get it, but there it is.
There's a little bit of buyer beware there kind of thing happening with that. Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. No kidding.
So, all right. There's so many questions. So let me ask it this way, right? Because we talked a little bit before we started recording the episode, like my experience in Salem and when I went to Bonaventure Cemetery in Savannah. Wah! Amazing, amazing places. If you are at all sensitive to energies, you're going to both be amazed and also repulsed at both places. Mm-hmm. And so that's the question that I have to ask you. When you're talking about weird things happening at some of these places, is it weird for anyone there, or is it because you're there and paying attention that it's weird?
Well, that's fantastic. I do think that your intention is at the top of the list of why you're going into a site. If your intention is to have an experience, then chances are you're going to have an experience. If your intention is to quote unquote make the people here look like idiots, then that may be something entirely different. That may be an entirely different experience you'll have. If you are going in with the intention of kicking up either malice from whatever is there, to an intention of quote unquote freeing whatever is there, then everyone's going to have a different kind of experience. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about ghost hunting shows. I try very hard not to say ghost hunt, because I'm not hunting anything, that has a negative connotation to itself. I prefer the term, I'm going on a paranormal investigation. But I will say paranormal investigation, and I might get tongue-tied, but then somebody next to me will say, oh, you mean you're going on a ghost hunt? And sometimes you just have to go, yeah, I'm going on a ghost hunt, but that's not my intention. But I remember one particular show, and there was in this particular show, I was tracking with what they were doing, and I thought, oh, wow, I could probably get into the show. And then they said, all right, now we're going to build a ghost trap. And I said, right, I'm out. Because no, that's just, there are so many things to unpack about that, about how wrong that is. Because it's about your intent. And if your intent is to build a ghost trap, I'm like, yeah, first off, one, you're not Peter Venkman. And this is not the Ghostbusters, you know, that is not what's going on here. And really what, when I go into this, my intent is to find out more about their story, find out more about their past. And this is, it's all very, it is very spiritual. It is hard to describe until you actually do it. Like I said, I'm the biggest skeptic to this, and then you pile on top of that my bad experiences with psychics. You pile onto that my Southern Christian upbringing, and you pile onto that my respect and love for science. And while yes, I'm a huge fan of the X-Files. Yes, I'm a huge fan of Kolchak the Night Stalker, which will date me. And while
welcome yes, to the club,
there you go. And yes, I still enjoy to this day, Ghost Hunters, the original, the OGs, the, you know, the Ghost Hunters, Taps, you know, I respect what they do. I do. I still do. I miss Grant, but I still respect what they do. But at the same time, you know, I went into this very, very much with eyes wide open. And especially with the clip that we're going to play later in the show, there's just stuff that has defied explanations, and not just for me, but for my wife as well. So I think, yeah, if you go in with the expectation of just straight up debunking, I don't think you are going to have an experience. You do have to pay attention to the space around you, and you have to kind of trust. This is something I said in the pilot episode. You got to trust the space. You can't. And I am guilty of this on that first investigation. When I was walking around with the camera and I said, I'm new at this, so go gently on me. That was my own defense mechanism. Because right before I say that, I said, is there anybody here with me right now? And I just got nothing but silence in response. Nothing but silence. And I'm like, I feel like I'm such an idiot. And that's when I said, I'm new at this, so go gently on me. And it wasn't until I got home that I clearly heard a voice go, no. And when I heard that, I screamed out my wife's name. She comes running up into the office. I just hand her the headphones. And she puts the headphones on, is watching the video. And when that happened, her eyes nearly shot out of her skull. And she said, you heard that? And I said, not at the time. Not at the time. And so, yeah, there's just, you know, I feel like I'm going in with eyes wide open. I think that's the best way to describe my intent, just to see what would happen. And I'm you know, this past weekend, everybody else was kind of weirded out by the Daniels experience. For me, it felt very calm. It felt very calm, but I haven't gone through the evidence yet. And that's the tricky bit, is going back and listening to the audio, watching the video, seeing for anything out of the ordinary. And that's the more mundane stuff that you don't see happening on some of the ghost hunting shows out there.
Sure. And you're not going to show the 8 hours of video that you have. You're going to show the parts that warrant being shown, if you will.
Right.
So I guess the thing that I want to go back a little bit and just sort of address hunting. Hunting implies capture to me. So right. when you're right. saying, you know, no, that's not my intent. First of all, yay, that's awesome. And no, it is, because again, I walk into this as a professional tarot and palm reader, right? So that's one of the things that I do, but I am not psychic at all. That's nothing like what I do. What I do has nothing to do with woo-woo in any form.
Okay.
And yet, things have happened in my own life where doing readings, when I say something that's going to happen a year and a half from now, and it's going to be on March 30th, and the person comes back and says, I don't know how you did that, but on March 30th, that exact thing that you said would happen happened. It's not me being psychic, it's me interpreting symbols. So that's I've had myself tested and I'm a little below average. So when you're looking at whatever, for lack of a better word, entity you are in communication with, in the moment, you are not in communication, because it's not until you get home and you pump up the volume, yay, Christian Slater movies, but it's not until you pump up the volume that you actually hear that something was there. So I guess what I wonder is, what's the level at which we go, oh, there is something there? Because these stories have been around, ghost stories, entity stories have been around as long as we've had imagination, right? So what does someone need to have before these gadgets that you talk about, before any of that, what do you need to have gotten to a place where you even start thinking that there might be some entity there?
So, and again, having friends who are skeptics, I'm not saying they're wrong and I'm right. That's something else I want to make sure that I'm making very clear. I'm sure that there are friends of mine who have seen me getting more and more into this and going, oh, here we go. You know, and or for Pete's sake, T, what are you doing? You know, that sort of thing. I think when you go into this, you go in with, for me, low expectations. You go in thinking this could be every investigation I approach, I go, this could be the investigation where nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or this could be the investigation where I walk away and I've got hours of audio and hours of video and there's nothing there. And you go, okay, that's fine. You know, not every game is going to be a grand slam. Not every performance is going to be that standing room only, you know, on your feet and getting into it. I mean, you and I are both performers. We both know what it's like that when you have that magic moment on stage, it's like, I'm going to hang on to this for as long as I can, because I have no idea if the next show is going to be a total dud. And
for
when
sure.
you have the, and when you have those dud shows, man, they haunt you. They haunt you. But at the same time, it's those magic moments you live for. Right. And so that's one thing. But going back to something else, this is something that we do a lot for those new listeners. This is something we do a lot on this show, because as Alda, you said earlier, something about how there's no real communication, stuff you get in, it's stuff you catch in post. Well, the two devices that I have in the screen capture are response devices. So they can be used to have full blown conversations, provided you keep them simple. The Flux, for example, is my go-to response device, because at the aforementioned TWA crash site, that was going off left and right. It was going off left and right with yes. And I mean, I remember one of the most haunting questions I asked was, do you have friends here? And I said green for yes, red for no, and the green light went off. And I remember whispering to Tina standing next to me, I said, they've got friends here. And I found that just particularly chilling. Then but it doesn't always have to be that. It was really sweet. We were in the Jenny Wade House in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania this past weekend. And I caught it on stream, and I have a clip of it, but it's I said to according to the Flux 2, the spirit of Jack was there. And Jack was the when Jenny Wade, and just to give a quick history lesson here, Jenny Wade was the one civilian casualty of Gettysburg. And she died while making bread for Union soldiers, and Confederate soldiers shot at her house, and one bullet managed to go through two different doors and killed her instantly. Well, when they found her body, when they were prepping her body and everything, there was a picture that she had rolled up in her apron, and it was the picture of this Union soldier. And he was, it was rumored that he and Jenny were going to be betrothed to one another. And he had her picture on him. So back then, when you had each other's pictures on you, that was more or less like an engagement ring. You know, that was that's when things got serious, you know. Mm-hmm. And with the Flux, I asked the Flux, Jack, if you're with us, I just got one question for you. And it's green for yes, red for no. Did you love Jenny Wade? And I asked it twice. Did you love Jenny Wade? Green for yes, red for no. And the green light went off. And I said, you are a gentleman. And when I said that, the red light went off. And that's the thing, is that part of what justifies how the motion sensors work and how in theory these devices work is that they're not doing the same thing over and over again. The Flux has never behaved the same way twice, from investigation to investigation to investigation. And it's when it doesn't work, it's when it's just completely silent, where I go, this is legit. And so in certain instances with certain devices, you can have conversations. But again, my critical mind kicks in and goes, yeah, but there are some methods that people use that I don't buy into. Case in point, the flashlight method. I've seen it work and I've seen it do some weird things, but the biggest problem I have with buying into the flashlight method, and if you don't know what that is, that's where you basically take the old school mag lights that screw and they make a connection and that makes the light go on. Well, you unscrew the light just at the point of where the light could go on or go off. And then you set it down in the off position. And you basically encourage a spirit or an entity to be there to turn the light on or turn the light off. The problem I have with that is the science behind it. Because if a mag light gets warm, parts are going to expand and then the connection will be made. And then when they cool off, they contract, and then the connection's broken. So it looks like they're going on and off randomly. And I'm just like, I don't know about that, you know? And everybody has their own approach to this. That's the other thing. Everybody has their own approach to this. And I know what works and doesn't work for me.
And I appreciate that. And the thing, I want to step back for a second and say, I'm not particularly trying to challenge what you're saying.
I tell you why. One of the best things we ever did, Phil and I, was we do this thing now where when we're on the road, we will do a pre-investigation stream. And we actually had somebody come into our stream and say, why are you doing this? Do you feel like you're wasting your time? And at first people were like, whoa, people in the chat were like, whoa, why are you asking a question like that? And we were like, no, we love this. And we went deep into why we do this. And chat wasn't eating it up. The guy who asked the question was like, hey, I really appreciate you guys giving me this time because I was afraid I offended you. And I'm like, no, it's these kind of questions that investigators need because it keeps us grounded. It keeps us, for the lack of a better term, in the moment. So you feel free to challenge me, Isolde. We've known each other for many years.
Very true.
Right ahead.
So that's awesome. And I guess the thing that I'm wondering about is stepping back a little bit. Something made people before we had these instruments to do whatever mm-hmm. measurements you're doing, something made people go, something is out there. Mm-hmm. What is that? And in your opinion, of course, and what's in it for the spirits? What's in it for whatever these entities are to be speaking in English to someone right. who is doing an investigation? So if you have thoughts about what those entities might be, especially since it's been, you know, I imagine something like this, if it has been going on, has been going on since before there was English, since there was before there were romance languages. So what language would those spirits be speaking? What are they? And what's in it for them? If you have thoughts on that, I'd love to hear it, because I have thoughts on it for myself, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
So I have actually heard a theory presented to me that the spirits are speaking in code. And I would be the first one to say, yeah, you're overthinking it, because if you, because I put myself in the place of the spirit. If I have somebody that's trying to make contact with me and say, are you with us? And I respond with, only when the cock crows at midnight. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, unless I'm making a connection with a former CIA agent, you know, then fine.
The boat will sail at dawn.
but only when the sun rises in the east. I mean, right. What? I mean, I don't think spirits are thinking that far ahead. I don't think that. But as far as why, because I mean, yeah, you're right. Harry Houdini made it a career, a second career, if you will, of debunking seances and things like that. And while I don't give any credence to people that use spirit boards, I refuse to use them at any kind of, I mean, it's a challenge for me to use the spirit board in Phasmophobia.
Can you tell me what a spirit board is?
A Ouija board.
Ah, okay. Uh-huh.
A Ouija board. Absolutely not. If you put one of those in front of me at an event, if we were at a haunted location and someone pulls out a spirit board, like, right, I'm out. That is a line I will not cross, because there are just one story too many about people playing out spirit boards and things going wonky. So that's a personal thing with me. But when it comes to the belief or the desire to to know there's an afterlife, I really think that stems from a place of hope. And people want to know that loved ones are okay. People want to know that maybe there's something after we shuffle off this mortal coil. People want to know, they want to understand the unknown. And if I remember correctly, it was Arthur C. Clarke who said, what is considered science by one civilization is considered magic by another.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I think that's where the stem and yeah, the love of these ghost stories all come from. You know, places of hope, places of wanting to believe that when we reach the end of our lives here, something is waiting afterwards. That being said, when it comes to proving that, that's a different thing altogether. And for me, it's less about proving anything. It's more about experiencing and even testing the limits of what science is all about, you know, and what we understand, you know, about the world itself and how the world works. You know, to me, believing in spirits and in the paranormal is no different than believing in love. Because, you know, I know hardcore skeptics, but they fall in love. But, you know, the question is, well, what is it? You know, do you have a physical manifestation of love? Well, yeah, you do when you meet the right partner. But how do you explain it? You know, is it a chemical reaction? Is it just pheromones? What is it? You know, and you know, that's when you start going down a really hardcore rabbit hole of philosophy. But you asked what's in it for the spirits, and that I feel like I can answer, because for the spirits, it is a chance to have their story heard. At least that is the intent that Phil Rossi and I take. And I believe we take that as writers, because Phil is an author himself. He is also a writer. He is not just a musician, but he is a writer. He specializes in horror. And when we go to these locations, we want to know the stories of the people that were there. We want to know, you know, Were you happy? Were you in love? Did you suffer? What can we do to help you? That kind of thing. And for the spirits, it's a chance to have their story heard. And I think, at least for me and Phil, that is very important, because you have to acknowledge that, you have to acknowledge when you get to these locations that if there is something there, that was a person once upon a time. That was a living soul. And this is why there is one particular location. I'm not going to go into the details, but there was one particular location where I said, I don't know if I feel comfortable going back to this location, not necessarily because of the spirits that were there, but because of the people that were in charge of preserving the site. There was someone in the staff that said they were laying out the rules for what we weren't supposed to do, for, because you have to, you know, no graffiti, no weapons, don't do this, don't do this. But then they added, and this is the first and only time I've ever heard this, no crossing over. We like our spirits where they are. And again, I'm just going to lay this out there. Southern Christian boy, right? That's me. I was so rattled by that, because I'm like, okay, so you're basically saying these spirits aren't people anymore. They're your property. And while the devil's advocate in me would say, well, maybe it's because they're worried someone's going to come in there and try to do a crossover. And the term in the paranormal industry, because it is an industry now, in paranormal circles, let's say that, is that crossing over is where you help a spirit move on. And where that woman's comment of we like our spirits where they are, it felt like it reduced whatever was at this location to private property. And yeah, I could understand the warnings if there's someone trying to do a crossover and it goes wrong. But there's another part of me that goes, that's kind of that crosses into a whole, I had to unpack that, and I'm still unpacking it. And I think Phil wants to go back to that location. And I'm like, it's going to take a little bit more convincing on my end, because it just felt unethically wrong.
I can see that. It felt, hearing you say it made me feel like, hey, who does she think she is?
Right.
So that was my reaction. And yet here I have so many questions. So if they're here and they're staying around, right, they're staying around Gettysburg or wherever, they're staying around where they died. Is that good? Like, if we're talking about, like you said, people want to know that they're somewhere after they die, that their loved ones are okay.
Right.
But billions upon billions of people have died over the length and breadth of this time on Earth. They don't all stick around, because there aren't, you know, 40 kajillion EVPs on your instruments.
Right.
In any, you know, other people died at Gettysburg. Do you see what I'm saying? So.
Right.
Where, like, how does that all break down? And why would, it's a little bit like, you know, in another life, in my previous life, I was Catherine the Great, that meme, that the sort of famous person, Jenny, who was the only civilian who died in Gettysburg, would be the one person who'd stayed around.
Right.
For you to communicate with. How does that jive with your own personal skepticism?
Well, that's where we start getting really deep into the weeds of the philosophy of how you approach paranormal investigation. For me, I would understand why some spirits would linger, because of the trauma involved. Gettysburg, traumatic event. TDA 514, traumatic event. Crescent State Correctional Institute, super traumatic event. I mean, when trauma is involved, when personal anguish is involved, I think that has a lot to do with it. I think that has a heck of a lot to do with it. And, you know, I'd be the first one to also say that, yeah, it would be kind of skeptical to say, I'd be very skeptical if someone were to say, you know, I'm in Vegas and I've just made contact with the ghost of Elvis. It's like, really? You sure about that? you know, that kind of thing. It's, or, you know, if someone were to say, yeah, I'm in New York right now and I've just made contact with David Bowie, which I would say that's not true. David Bowie just went home. He just got beamed up and he just went back to, you know, to where he
10 to 6, ascended. Right.
Yes, exactly. So it is hard. It is very, very hard. Also, it depends on the kind of haunting. I have, in the short time that I've been doing this with Phil, have experienced both intelligent hauntings and residual hauntings.
What's the difference?
The difference between a residual haunting, we call it a Cresson, and it's a clip that we'll be discussing early, you know, later on in the show's run. but in that clip, you hear Phil say, "Is there anyone here?" And then you hear what sounds like an alarm. And then you hear the slamming of cell doors. Now, I don't think that was a response for Phil's question. That was just a moment that has been caught in time and it's just replaying. And that's what a residual haunting is, is where you hear something replaying over and over again. And then there's the intelligent hauntings. And the intelligent haunting is when the response device are kicking in and you're having conversations with people. And the intelligent haunting, sometimes it's the person not even knowing that they're dead or having a tough time accepting that they're dead. Phil caught at TWA and he shared the EVP on TikTok where he caught a female voice that said, "Oh God, I'm dead." And a lot of it is that has been one of the bigger theories, is that people are saying that they don't realize that they've passed. And there's a new theory that I've seen banding about with some other paranormal investigators that I've met, where in some moments, there's a weird distortion of time going on, and we, as in us in this present day, when we're doing a paranormal investigation, we appear as ghosts to the people that we're trying to connect with. And that's just a whole mind bending thing right there. And while we're descending deeper and deeper into the weeds here, I can say without a question that when you get into an investigation, when you allow yourself to be in that moment, time just blinks by. Time just absolutely positively blinks by. It just completely distorts. When Phil and I went to Cresson, and this made me feel like a rock star because this was the week of my 53rd birthday, right? Again, old spirits. That's why we're calling it old spirits. But I was turning 53 that week, and I signed up with Phil to do a 12-hour lock-in at Cresson State Correctional Institute. This place was a TB ward that became a mental asylum and medium security prison. And I was spending 12 hours in this place. And I was just like, there's going to be some moments where it's just going to be either super slow or it's going to be this. Nope. The night just blinked by. And the only time it felt long was the final hour, because I was exhausted but exhilarated all at the same time. And I felt like a freaking rock star because I pulled a half day at the job. Then we got in the car, drove 6 hours, and then we got there. And so we literally had a 36 hour day. And I just felt awesome because I just like, I conquered, I climbed that mountain. But, but again, if you were to say, did it feel like 12 hours? Not even close. I felt like I had just gotten there. And it was just an incredible experience and terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, there must be an adrenaline rush.
Oh, there is.
That accompanies this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's an adrenaline rush, especially when you feel like something is really clicking, or something is happening that is just, again, it either defies explanation, or just gets you on your hackles. For example, I remember at Crescent, we're in the hospice, and the rule of the hospice was, if you went into the hospice, you only left when you left in a body bag. That was pretty clear. And we were in the hospice, and we were doing, Phil was doing a spirit box session, but he was doing the Estes method. And the Estes method is where you blindfold yourself, you put on headphones, so you can't hear what anybody is asking you. But somebody asks you questions, and then you respond with whatever you hear coming through the spirit box. And so Phil goes into the spirit box, and I said, "Tell me your name." And Phil responds with Ainsley. And I should also preface, the spirit box is basically a radio that cycles through, the frequencies. And the idea is that the spirits work through the spirit box, manipulate the frequencies, what's coming through, and then whatever pieces of audio you hear, that is their response. And again, I was very skeptical of the spirit box because, one, I hate the thing. It's noisy as crap, and I just really don't like it.
Hmm.
But this night, I kind of came around to it because, again, Phil can't hear my questions, and I'm reading it off to him, and I just basically say, "Tell me your name." He says, "Ainsley." And I said, "Are you sick?" He responds with horror. At that point, on the other side, I hear one of our response devices, the flux, go off. And it was the red light, which can also be interpreted as stop, because I've been using green for yes, red for no all night. So that went off. So then I tapped Phil on the shoulder, and he leapt out of his skin and it terrified me. I mean, I'm glad I was wearing brown pants. That's all I can say. It was just terrifying. And then we both take a breath. Phil goes back under. And I asked, I'm trying to remember the other questions that I asked. But the responses were absolutely chilling.
Hmm.
There was a response about sickness. There was a response about pain. And then at one point he said, "Stop." And then Phil just pulled himself out of it and said, "Yeah, we're done. If the spirit box says stop, you stop." Like, oh, okay. But it was, yeah, that was, there is an adrenaline rush to this, especially when you're at home after the investigation, reviewing the stuff, and you know for a fact nothing was happening, or there was no sound or anything, and you pick up something. That's what makes EVP so addictive, because you know, you remember that there was nothing in that moment. But again, from this weekend, the surprise for me was I'm streaming this EVP session in the Jenny Wade house. And Pip is talking, and she says, "I know this must have just been so frustrating seeing your friend Wesley fight on the other side, fight for the Confederacy, fight against Gettysburg." And on the stream, you hear, "Oh, I hate him." And as soon as that happened, I heard it. Everybody in the room heard it. And then I got on the stream. Did Pip just sigh? And when Pip said no, she went back. Some people in stream actually clipped the moment, played it back, and you hear it in real time. And it was, you know, everybody was accounted for, and no, it just came out of the blue, and it was just ridiculous. I'm just like, I'm still trying to process that moment, and tell myself, okay, what just happened, you know? How did that happen? What you know? And it, again, it goes back to you don't know, you know, it can shock you and stun you and completely surprise you, just how people react and what happens, you know. It's just It never stops to amaze me. It never stops to amaze me.
So many questions. Okay, so I know.
I love that about you. I love the so many questions. So many questions.
It's just true. So I luckily we have a clip to play in just a minute, but I wanna before we get to the clip, because I do wanna play it for sure. Right. I want to introduce something that is not a spirit paranormal thing, perhaps, but a different flavor. I'm doing a project right now where I'm doing a work of art every single day for a year. Right. And today's work of art was a little dot, and the dot became a circle, and the circle became bigger, 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 got to its maximum size, and then receded in size until there was nothing left but a dot. And then the dot disappeared. And what that is a representation of a three-dimensional object moving through two-dimensional space. And the reason I did it was because I was in preparation for talking to you today. I was doing some research, and I love Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he has a wonderful talk all about, he says, this is what chills scientists to the bone. What if some of the phenomena that we have zero explanation for in our three dimensions is just a ninth dimensional phenomenon or being happening to pass through our three-dimensional space, right? It would be the same as if a three-dimensional sphere moved through a two-dimensional piece of paper, right? That's what it would look like. It would be a tiny dot, then get to a big circle, and then recede and disappear again. In three dimensions, we'd go, oh, that's a sphere. No problem. Right. But to two-dimensional people, they'd have no idea, right? So what if these, what we're calling spirits or entities, are multidimensional beings? What if they are? And this is, you know, backed by science, and I can talk about it in this way because Neil deGrasse Tyson says that there are scientists who actually think about this stuff. And I'm not going to get into string theory or the multiverse with you or whatever, but what if it is this higher dimensionality periodically passing through this third dimension? What are your thoughts on that?
So that is actually one of the theories that people kick around. They kick around that this is a dimensional thing, that, you know, that there is there are just points in the world where the fabric of space and time are particularly weak and things leak through. It's funny too, because, you know, the example you're giving is actually from it's from a short story. I believe the short story is called Flatland, and it's where it's a two-dimensional world. And the two-dimensional beings in this world encounter a three-dimensional object, a sphere, and they don't know what to make of it. Mm-hmm. And that is a possibility. I think too that scientists, I really feel like scientists and people who respect science are quick to dismiss paranormal science and paranormal investigation. And I think in some instances for good reason, but I think lately some of them are starting to say, well, hang on a minute, because a lot of things that science once believed this is the way it is, this is truth, suddenly it's not. You know, black holes, for example, quasars, pulsars. You know, those are the real big unknowns back in the 80s when late 80s, early 90s, when I took astronomy. But now I think, you know, the more we find out, the more science, I can't remember who said it, but there's an old saying about science where science is not necessarily the be all end all truth. It's basically the truth that's trying to disprove itself. And yes, and then when you start getting into, I'm sorry, but if you start getting into quantum physics, and I've dabbled with quantum physics and paranormal science, man, those two are kissing cousins of each other, in my opinion, because you're really getting into some deep weeded stuff that's based on a lot of theories. And I think that one of the theories that people kick around, it has some validity to it. That this could all be just some multidimensional thing happening, something where space and time is overlapping, and these things are happening. And it's, and for some people, that's a real tough sell. It's a real tough sell. I know there were some people that didn't particularly care for Carl Sagan as an astronomer, because he would kick around a lot of these high level theories, and they would regard Sagan as something of a showman. And I'm sitting there going, okay, how much of that is scientific criticism, and how much of that is professional jealousy?
For sure.
Because, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but Carl was my boy.
Rock star.
He was, man. I mean, I remember as a kid watching Cosmos, the original Cosmos with Sagan. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mind getting so blown when he said, in order to bake an apple pie from scratch, one must unlock the secrets of the universe. And I was just like, oh God, I just want to sit on that for days. And I did. and I love that. I love that, you know, but I mean, again, the question is, could this be, there's so much could be's. There's so many could be's. I mean, you saw it in the pilot episode. If you remember, Isolde, when I was in this one clip, this one very compelling clip where I was just, it was EVP after EVP after EVP. There was a female voice that says, come sit. And seconds later, I say, would it be all right if I had a seat? And to me, that was just me asking if it was okay for me to have a seat. I did not hear anything in the moment. I did not hear anybody tell me to sit down or to say that I could sit down. But the fact that I picked up an EVP that said, come sit. And then seconds later, I said, would it be all right if I had a seat? There's a connection in there somewhere. There's a point where it's coincidence. And then there's a point where it's like a little too close to home. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, and that's why I think you see in paranormal science, you see a lot of people kicking around all kinds of different ideas, all kinds of different, you know, theories of what could be. And just to swing it back over to some things to kind of not necessarily prove to your listeners that I'm not completely buying into everything in paranormal science, but like I'm very skeptical of cryptids. A cryptid is like a Bigfoot, a Loch Ness monster, a Slender Man, the Mothman, big hero in cryptid lore, the Mothman. These are creatures that have avoided or eluded science and haven't been categorized. And while I'm like, know about that, you know, to me, I'm just like, I'm having a tough time buying into the Bigfoot. It's a great character to write short stories on, which I'm currently doing right now. But as far as cryptids go, I'm very skeptical of it. That being said, there was this one cryptid enthusiast that I do follow. Her show goes by the name of Hellbent Hollier, and she's been on Phil's show before, and they were talking about some people that were giving her the heebie-jeebies when they met them on a trail, and she said these were people that they were smiling at me, but you could tell they didn't know how to smile, you know. And in response to that, I would say, while I'm skeptical about cryptids, I am not so skeptical of mountain people, of like people who have just gone up into the mountains and they stay in the mountains and you never see them unless they come down for, you know, there's a subculture of humanity that I know exists. And it's something that I would be more than happy to avoid any contact with. I don't consider them cryptids, but I do consider that like a thing, because of all the documentation of people who have been, you know, families that have just basically gone on into the woods and they've never been seen until generations later, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd like to think that it is not totally X-Files with that episode Home, but you know, it's just, yeah, there, there's, there's a place where paranormal and science intersect. And I do think there are some gray areas in there. Some I'm willing to believe, others I'm kind of skeptical of. And so, yeah. Do I think Mothman exists? No, nothing have I seen. And as far as Loch Ness Monster is concerned, when I was growing up, it was a legend I wanted to believe in. It was a great roller coaster, but unfortunately, even the guy who took the legendary picture said, yeah, I faked it. So, yeah.
There's that. Well, you know, I mean, this is the thing. I grew up watching In Search Of. Grew up loving X-Files. All of that, you know, it titillates the imagination. And on some level, these kinds of investigations to me are partially that it grabs your, I mean, that's the name of your studio, for Pete's sake. It's right. So there's something here that is all about imagining what if, you know, right. I ask this of my coaching clients all the time. Imagine this, you were living the life you wanted to live, for example, what would it be like? So imagine if this was something that you could study, what would you need to do it? And so for you, when I'm listening to you speak, it feels to me like it's really captured that imagination, the desire to know more.
Yeah, it has, because it defies reason. It defies reason. That's the only way I can describe it. I know for a fact there was nobody around me. There were three people in that house, and it was not that big of a house that me, Phil, and Jonathan, the guy from Fredericksburg Paranormal, you know, it was just the three of us in that house. And I'm wandering around with that camera, and there are multiple voices speaking to me. They are responding to what I'm saying. And they're not only responding to what I'm saying, but then they're saying Phil's name. They are present and in the moment. And I'm like, this is, why did this happen? And then there's the clip that we're about to play where it's me and Pip, and I'll go on ahead and set it up. We were wrapping up an afternoon in Gettysburg, and it was twilight. And we had taken a wrong, and this is the other beautiful thing. This EVP is our gold standard. There has yet to be an EVP, maybe rivaled by what happened in the Jenny Wade house this past weekend, that we swear by. And that we just go, this is the most incredible thing we've ever caught. And we're walking back towards, we had taken a wrong turn. We meant to go to hear taps, on cemetery in the cemetery, and instead we went the opposite direction, went the wrong way, and we're coming back. So we've been walking all day, and or sorry, all afternoon. And as we're walking by, I pulled out the H4, and I start recording. And I basically am saying that we're about to wrap up. And as I'm saying this, I'm standing in front of a memorial to the Army of the Potomac. Okay. And I just start talking. And then this happened. You ready to play it?
I am absolutely ready.
Okay.
It's a little bit long, just so you know. So you're going to have to listen for a little bit, but we're going to play it. Ready? 3, 2, 1, play.
So we're about to leave. If you want to say anything, now would be a good time. If you are here, give us a sign. Speak with us, please.
Anyone from the Army of the Potomac? Is here?
Right. So that clip kept Pip up for nights afterwards. She was trying to figure that out. She was trying to explain it. It's a brand new card. There were no artifacts. what we heard was not an artifact. And it was a voice that had tenor, it had tone, and it had intent. And, you know, all the other stuff Pip thought was cool, but that one was the one that, that just, it completely defied everything that Pip understood and accepted. And as for me, I was just like, all I could do was just go, wow. On all I did to the clip was just pop up the volume around I'm here, which is what I heard. I'm here. And when we play this clip for even the most hardened skeptic, they just shake their heads and they go, I can't explain it. And that to me is part of the adrenaline rush, but it's also part of me wanting, it really captivates the imagination because it wasn't just a voice that we heard. It wasn't just a residual. That was a response. That was a direct response to Pip asking if there was anybody from the Army of the Potomac. Now you hearing that is all the, I know that when you watched, you told me that when you watched the pilot episode of Old Spirits, you were a little unsettled by the no, by the mm-hmm. very first one that, but what did you feel when you heard this?
Honestly, when I heard it, I felt sad. That was, I felt sorrow. That was, that, that seems to be my response anytime I am in the presence of whoever or whatever is just sorrow on some level, because like you said earlier, if spirits or if this is spirits staying around, generally speaking, it's a trauma event that kept them where close to where they are. If aside from any religious or spiritual sort of dogma, whatever that is, if that is the case, then this poor either child or woman, because it sounds like a either a feminine or a young boy's voice,
right,
is probably, you know, still there. This the Potomac Army was years and years ago, and so this spirit is still there. And I don't know if time moves the same way for those entities, whatever they are. I have no idea, honestly.
Right.
And so there's a lot. I have a lot of sorrow for whatever entity that is or isn't, because they're still there at the site where so much trauma happened.
Right. Right. And there's a lot of, and that's the thing is that. I really think that that when something traumatic, and let's be honest, Gettysburg was one of the most traumatic events in American history, because so many lives were lost there, and it was
sure.
It was yeah, it's, you know, to say it was dramatic is kind of an understatement. And yet you hear that voice, and you just go, it almost makes the history a little more tangible. It is heartbreaking, but at the same time, you get this thrill because you feel like that was a connection. That was an honest to God connection. And it's really hard to kind of wrap your brain around that, you know? And I think that's what was going on with Pip. But after we caught that EVP, Pip was like, I'm in, I'm totally in. I'm and totally in.
It's no longer just the two of you. Now it's the three of you, or maybe even the four of you.
Oh no. It's the entire family.
I love it.
We went back to Gettysburg. That's the funny thing. I had never been to Gettysburg because I was never a big fan. I've never been a big fan of, and this is a kid that was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia. I was never a fan of the pageantry and the whatever you want to call it of the American Civil War. I've always found the American Civil War to be a travesty, to be a tragedy, to be one of the darker periods of our country's history. I've always felt that. And when people glorify it the way people do, I just go, I don't get that. I just don't get that. It makes no sense to me. Not at all. So when it came to Gettysburg, I'd never been there. And since Phil took us that first time, and I should also mention that Pip has never been to Gettysburg at all in her 12 years in this country. And after all of my time in this country and Pip's time in this country, we have been to Gettysburg in the past year at least 6 times.
Wow.
We just can't, because every time we go, there's only been one time that we have never had a paranormal experience. And it was, ironically, the week before Halloween. And I have a theory about that. I have a theory about that. My theory is, even ghosts need a break. Because we were going as part of a Twitch meetup. And, you know, it was all fun. You know, we're going to have a good time. But we were trying to get to our group. We were trying to get to our tour group. And we were tripping over other tour groups. I mean, literally, I stopped counting after 7
right.
tour groups, right? And Gettysburg is not that big of a town. So the fact that we were just tripping over one another, one group after another group after another group, I just think that the ghosts were like, F this, I'm out. I'm done with tourist season. And I was thinking in the back of my mind, if it's this bad in Gettysburg around Halloween, I cannot imagine what it would be like to be in Salem or worse, New Orleans. That's my theory. That's my theory that if you want to go on a paranormal investigation, do not plan it around Halloween, because even then ghosts are like, I'm done.
Right. April 20th, when there's nothing else going on, go then.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, speaking of Salem, I did not have any instruments or whatever with me. I don't do paranormal investigations as a rule. But when I was in Salem, I have to say, stepping on the green where so many, mostly women, were killed, it boggled me. I stepped one foot on that grass and jumped off like I'd been scalded. It was ridiculous how I started hearing screaming in my head and had to just step away. On the other hand, I went to Bonaventure Cemetery down in Savannah, and I actually had a little EMF reader in my iPad, and there was this one spot. Yeah, it was cool. There was this one spot that kept spiking, and every time we walked by that one spot, it spiked. And we don't know, you know, I did not carry it through. I didn't do any other investigation or anything like that. But it was interesting that it was this one spot next to this one crypt. Anywhere else, we were like, this is cool. We love Bonaventure. It's really neat. And probably someone like you, with all of your instruments and with that open mindset, would probably have a very different experience than I did. But that brings me to, what is your bucket list? Where are the places that you want to go to do some of these investigations?
Okay. Top of the list, Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Ever since I saw Waverly Hills on Ghost Hunters, I'm like, this is the place I want to go. And it looks, everyone has said, you know, across the board, that it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. Now, granted, I know that it's a popular place. It's a very popular place with paranormal investigators. And that would definitely be on my bucket list. Another thing is, they're not so much bucket list items as they are specific places, but there are certain things that I want to investigate. I would love to investigate a lighthouse. I would love to investigate a lighthouse because there was in the early seasons of Ghost Hunters, it was some of the most compelling evidence they've ever caught. But there was they caught a shadow figure going up the steps of the lighthouse and then literally bending over the banister. You can see it. And it's just crazy, crazy, incredible footage. So I've always wanted to do a lighthouse. And another thing I would love to investigate one of these historic battleships or aircraft carriers that is moored and open to the public. I would love to investigate one of those, because especially if it's seen combat, there's going to be some energy in there. There's going to be something in there. And And then there's another, if I couldn't get to Waverly, because I don't know how, and that's the other thing I would say, that is, if you were to ask me what is the hardest thing about Paranormal Investigation, apart from just editing the show, it's getting access. And it's all, for me, it is all about access. You need to have access to the property. You need to have access to as many aspects of it as possible, because otherwise you are trespassing, and that does not bode well. There's a fine line between paranormal investigation and trespassing. And when you have people say, well, I don't see any signs, that does not hold up in court. You have to have permission to access a space. And that was one of the things that I think I was disappointed about with the Blackburn Inn, is that because they weren't leaning into that, there were plenty of places that we just did not have access to. And we even had to be careful walking around the grounds at night, because if we had our flashlight, you know, we couldn't have our flashlights out. We had to keep our flashlights covered. And that was really making it difficult, because we were kind of stalking around, and you shouldn't be doing that. You should be able to move through the space and just, you know, approach it. But we had to keep our voices down. We had to make sure that we weren't, you know, disturbing any of the other guests. And it made the investigation nigh on impossible. We had access, but it was very limited. And whenever we talk about certain places, I always ask, the first question I ask Phil is, what's the access? How much access do we have? And there was one place that is on my bucket list now, because I've seen it on some other of the ghost hunting shows. It's the Trans-Allegheny Mental Asylum. And it is one of the biggest masonry jobs in the entirety of the United States. It is a beautiful building. Absolutely gorgeous. It is also terrifying looking. Some places are starting to do this now, where they're starting to say, if this is how much it will cost you to rent this space out for paranormal investigation. And it's to me, it's a great idea, because if like this one place says, you know, $1,000, you get 5 hours in here. Okay. If you can find 10 other people, if you can find a group of 10, that just took the cost from $1,000 to $100 a head.
Sure.
That's pretty affordable. And you go in, you do the thing, you're out. And it's really exciting to do that. But there are some places that I feel a little, and this was another thing about, like, for example, someone said, what about East Penn State? East Penn State Penitentiary, East Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's a very popular spot. It's a gorgeous space. A lot of stone masonry again. It's creepy AF. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm feeling comfortable doing that. And the reason why is because the people who own Eastern State Penitentiary, they do a haunted house. And when you do a haunted house in a place like East Penn State, I'm just like, that's kicking some stuff up right there. And I just don't feel necessarily safe in a place like that. And then there's another one, I think also on my bucket list, but knowing the history behind it, I would have to really kind of mentally prepare to go in there and say, okay, this is going to be a bumpy ride. Penhurst Asylum, also in Pennsylvania. People didn't know what was going on in there. And, a local Pennsylvania news agency, Philadelphia agency, went in there to do a series of investigations. And, you know, I've seen some documentaries about Penhurst, and to this day, the cameramen, the people who were involved with that, they get teary eyed talking about that place. They said that I've done all kinds of news coverage everywhere. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. And again, trauma, that kind of trauma, it makes an impact on a place. So I would say those are some of my bucket list places. And I might in May, knock wood, in May, I might actually get one of my bucket lists down. But I've got to do a little more research to find out the accessibility and also to find out when they open up a place for paranormal investigation to the public, how many people do they cap it off to where they say, okay, we're done. We're not going to sell any more tickets after that. Mm. Because you can overcrowd a space. And when you do that, it completely throws off everything, you know, that you're wanting to accomplish during the night.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I it's interesting.
I can hear it in your voices, Aldo. You're just like, what do I ask next?
No. It's not that.
Oh, many questions.
It's true. I have a lot of questions, but I guess the thing to me, I keep coming back to, it's not Mildred's Flower and Pastry Shop that is the space that you're going to investigate. It's sanitariums and asylums and prisons.
Not necessarily. We actually went and did a paranormal investigation at a bed and breakfast that didn't have a... Now, that's been weird. Going to places that are bed and breakfast or looking at places that are bed and breakfast and going to places that are bed and breakfast that were once insane asylums or something like that. That's a little weird. I'll admit that's a little weird. But we went to this one bed and breakfast in Mineral, Virginia, that was just a bed and breakfast, but it was reputedly haunted, and it was it's a place called Dunlora Inn in Mineral, Virginia, and Phil and I had a blast there, because that's the other thing that I think we should note. Yes, at TWA there was definitely some malice there. There might have been some malice at Blackburn Inn, at least in the surrounding properties. Definitely malicious spirits at Crescent, but we went to Dunlora, and the spirits that we encountered there, they were an absolute hoot. What happened?
I love
was,
that spirits were a hoot.
Yeah, they can't. No, seriously, spirits can be. Spirits do have a sense of humor. There was a so what happened was I had my flux in another room. And in the room that I was in, there was a grid set up, and I noticed that the grid was getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, and then it went back to full again. So I went to the other room, and they were saying, "Does anybody have any questions that they want to ask?" And I said, "I have a question. I just watched the red grid in my in the room that I was in just dim and then get bright again. Was that you?" And my flux suddenly went to green, and I said, "Well, that's a green for yes." And it was it didn't even hesitate. I said, "Was that you?" Boom, it went green. And speaking of the flux, when we were at St. Albans, there was a I set up the flux in this one room. And it kept doing this pattern over and over and over again. It would go red, red, green, red, red, green, red, red, green. Kept doing that over and over and over again. So I said, you know, I would say, "Can you step away from the device? Thank you. Now that you know how it works, let's have a conversation." Red, red, green, red, red, green. I was like, "Okay, fine." Then we had to wrap up. So that was on the second floor. So I turn it off. We go down to the basement. I turn it on, calibrates. I get ready to ask red, red, green, red, red, green, red, red, green. And I'm like, "Huh. Okay." So then we pack up, we go to the fifth floor. We go to the third floor. I started up and I said, "I'd like to speak to red, red, green, red, red, green." And I'm like, "Okay, hang on a minute." And each time that it went off, at that particular place, Phil and I had brought a friend of ours, Jada, who she says, I'm a full blown medium. She has seen the dead. And I said, "Okay, are you picking up something?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm picking up whoever's doing this. He's a big guy. And he wants to mess with you." We found out later that on the staff of St. Albans was a cook who loved to play practical jokes on people. And he was known for being a big tall guy. So you can either connect the dots however you feel, but I was like, the fact that I'd never seen the Flux do that, but on every floor it did that. Hmm. I was like, okay, I see what you're doing there. And yeah, I do think ghosts can have a sense of humor, but not all places that we go to, you know, have some kind of trauma to them.
That's good.
Yeah, that's very good.
Because it feels like otherwise it would be just really disruptive to your peace of mind.
Well, yeah.
If it's just always traumatic. For me, it would. Yeah. I remember back in my DJ days in high school, a friend of mine was doing we decided to do a 4-hour overnight graveyard shift, Beatles, all Beatles, trivia, everything. And she decided to play, this is back when we had turntables. She decided to play Revolution Number 9 backwards see what we could hear on the air live, right? So she's doing it and it's about 4 o'clock in the morning. We haven't slept in days. And we, you know, number 9, and we freaked out. I mean, it was built into the record to have that happen, but we still completely freaked out. And so talk to me before we wrap this up. I would love to know.
Have to?
I know. Other work calls. Let's put it that way.
Other work calls. I hear you.
So, talk to me about the freakiest thing. Talk to me about what has been the absolute freakiest thing that's happened.
Wow. Again, I go back to TWA Flight 514. That's the one that told me, okay, this isn't all fun and games. This isn't all a hoot. With all the trauma that happens at Gettysburg, the spirits that we have encountered there have all been delightful. There's been almost a sense of whimsy, a sense of peace, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But at TWA Flight 514, you got into the space, and the best way to describe it is that you walk into, and again, we had to be very careful about this because they were building the house there. I'm pretty sure it's built by now, but they were building the house there, and so we knew we were on private property, so we felt like we were being very careful. But there's basically a slab of rock, which was where the wreckage had stopped, where the fuselage had stopped the plane. But also there is it's basically forest, but there's this clearing. It's almost like for the lack of a better term, it's a fairy circle. It's just a forest and then a perfect circle. And in the off center of this circle is a giant tree trunk, but the tree trunk is sheared. It wasn't sawed; it was sheared, and you can see it's got like black in the bark, right? That's rough. And there's nothing growing. There's nothing growing in this circle, and that's where they set up. They're setting up the well for this house because there was a random pipe sticking out, and that's where I put the Flux because it needs a flat surface. And I've been talking to these to the people at the crash site, back and forth, and then I finally said, Phil and I would like to come back, and all day I've been saying green for yes, red for no. So whatever's there, they knew it, but I throw it out there as a reminder in case I'm talking to somebody new. But I said, Phil and I would like to come back to the crash site tonight. Would that be okay? Green for yes. And before I could say red for no, it automatically went red. Automatically went red. And I said, are you saying you don't want us to come back? It beeped again red. Before I can even finish it, it's just beeping. And it hadn't done that at all. It's almost rhythmic going, no, no, no. But Phil and I said, even after I had said, is it safe for us to come back? Again, it started beeping in a rhythm. No, no, no. But Phil and I said, we know better. And we went back. And we went back and we get to the clearing. We set up our gear. And at that point, we had very, very little gear. We had like, you know, a single video camera. We had the Flux and and we had our recorders, obviously, our audio recorders. And we get set up and we're feeling jacked. I mean, we're feeling really excited. I felt excited. I remember feeling, even when he shut off the lights to give us a feel of how dark it was going to be. I got, oh wow, this is going to be great. This is going to be awesome. I mean, I just felt so jacked. We get to the clearing, still really excited. We set everything up and it's like, I think we're ready to go. So we hit record and Phil says, we would like to talk to anyone who is here from TWA flight 514. And the moment he said that, it was like somebody threw a switch. And even though nothing had really changed, and like we could hear crickets, we could hear frogs, we could hear all that stuff, the entire atmosphere changed. And on a dime, I went from being super excited to, I need to get the hell out of here now. But I fought it. And at one point I said, okay, I think we're too close to the device. Let's go to the other side of the clearing. So we went to the other side of the clearing. So now instead of the forest being in front of us, the forest is behind us. And I could not shake the feeling that we were being watched. We're not done yet. As I said before, the Flux was going off all night. All day. It was going off all day when we were there. Red, green, red, green, red, green. It's just pulsing blue. Just pulsing blue, pulsing blue, pulsing blue. That's the neutral mode for it. And I said, is there someone here that wants to talk to us? Do you want to talk to us? Green for yes, red for no. Green light goes off. It's like, okay, great. So you want to talk to us? Great. And I said, Phil, ask him something. So Phil throws out one question. No response. Throws out a second question. No response. He throws out a third question. And all we're seeing is the blue light going dim, bright, dim, bright. And Phil at one point, we're waiting for a response. And Phil turns to me and says, I think it's time for us to go. And I said, I want to ask one more question. And Phil said, okay. And I said, and I'm going to double down. And Phil says, double down then. And I said in my best stage voice, are we safe right now? Green for yes, red for no. And I watched the light pulse at least three times. And that's when I said to Phil, we need to leave. Because even though it didn't answer, I got my answer. I was in complete, there was no fight or flight. It was all flight.
No decision to be made there.
No decision whatsoever. I just said, and I did not even turn off the camera. I didn't even take it off the tripod. I just folded up the tripod, folded up the legs, put it over my shoulder and said, let's go. And we left. And I was convinced that we had been out there for 30 minutes. It hadn't even been 15 minutes. And it was truly the most it just felt sinister. That is the best way to describe it. And I've said to people, I'm okay with going out there during the day. I'm more than okay with going out there during the day, but there's no way I'm going out there at night. No freaking way. And I would say that is the strangest thing that has happened during this. And what made it so strange, what made it so terrifying, was how quickly the mood changed. And it all started with that first question. And that's when we knew when people talk about, you know, well, you open the door, you know, and all that stuff. Well, that, I think that's what they're talking about. Literally, we extended an invitation and then things went pear-shaped.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, you're purposefully engaging with something that is other, whatever that is, whatever it is, since, you know, in the end, there is no proof one way or the other, lots of people making assertions, but it is something that you're trying to do that is different than the tangible, different than exactly what your senses can pick up as far as, you know, can you see it, touch it, smell it, taste it, whatever.
Right, right.
So yeah, on that level, we can sort of go, of course, this is, you know, this is on some level exactly what I'm trying to achieve. And it looks like you're going to be doing this for a while, because the first episode, it airs in 2 days, right? You said the 16th?
Yes, it's going to air on YouTube. It's at old, you can reach our YouTube channel through oldspiritsinvestigations.com, and that's where you should see the first episode. It's going to go live on February 16th, and then but we don't talk about TWA until episode 2. Episode 1 is basically the pilot episode where you get to see how we're going to do it, how we're going to present the evidence. And you know, I pride myself in saying that we're doing things a little differently. We're doing things a little differently. And I'm pretty proud of our approach to it. And that's we've already got season 1 mapped out, and we're already looking ahead to season 2.
I think that's fabulous. And it's, you know, one of the things that you just said, you're doing things differently. One of the things that you're doing between episodes, I think, is really cool. These 5-minute paranormals that I got to see one of them. I think it's great that you are, again, maintaining that sort of scientific integrity as much as possible. Can you talk a little bit before we end this fab conversation about what 5-minute paranormals are and what your intent is for them and also for the show?
Well, the intent for 5-minute paranormals is to provide content when we are working on the next big chunk of content. It was a formula that I experimented with when I was starting up my own YouTube channel. And then I unfortunately had to stop because I picked up a day job. And the whole idea behind the 5-minute paranormal is that we're going to do an investigation a month so that we would have plenty of content to run out throughout for the first season. But in between the shows, we wanted to do something, and it had to be something quick and something easy to digest. And that's when Phil and I came up with the idea of the 5-minute paranormal, where we have a clip no more than 5 minutes, maybe 6 or 7 if we got into the weeds, but but something that would be, this is something that you should know, or this is something that you should consider when starting off. Like, we already got our first listener feedback. We got like a listener viewer feedback before we even dropped the first episode, because somebody knew that I was into this, and they said, well, my wife wants to get into this, so what's a good starter pack? So we did an entire 5-minute paranormal. Within 5 minutes, we said, here's what you want to get for your very first piece of gear, or your very first kit to start off with. But we also are doing things like, here's what you need to know when you're looking for EVPs, like how much is too much audio compression. We're going to have like product reviews. Like, I do a review of the Flux, I'm going to do a review of Eddie, but then we're also going to have Jada, the medium, come on and go, why is it important at the end of every investigation to cleanse yourself, to do some type of cleansing ritual, whether it's a prayer, whether it's smudging yourself. Why does that matter? Why is it important? We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how do you grade an EVP? What's an A EVP versus a grade B versus a grade C? And it's these little tips and product reviews, so that if you're getting into this, you have an idea of where to start. You have an idea of what to invest your money in. And also, this is the advice that we feel, you know, that we've learned in just the not even first 6 months. These are things that were like, okay, this is what I would have loved to have known before I got into it. And that's how we're approaching the 5-minute paranormals. And they've been a lot of fun to produce, because they're quick and easy to produce. And then you get to the actual, you know, so there's going to be 3 5-minute paranormals and then an investigation. So it goes investigation, 3 5-minute paranormals, investigation, 3 5-minute paranormals, then investigation. And that way you're still getting content even while I'm working on the next episode.
and it's practical knowledge,
it's
which I think
practical.
Is really great.
Yeah, that's what we like.
So it's cool. It's interesting. It's compelling. But what is your vision for this show long term?
The vision that we have for Old Spirits is that we keep doing it until we either don't want to do it anymore, or we run out of places to visit. And so far the list is just getting bigger. We do dream pie in the sky sort of things of like, you know, what if Discovery Plus calls us? You know, what if somebody calls us and says, hey, we want to take your show to the next level. And we'd love that. We'd love that. We would love to see people talk about Old Spirits in the same way they talk about Ghost Hunters and some of the other popular shows, Kindred Spirits, things like that. We would love to see people talk about us in the same way. But we also know that we're doing something a little different. Instead of the continuous like filming of what the investigation looks like, we're actually doing reaction videos. We're doing it almost like a play-by-play where you have us in the actual model that I'm following for Old Spirits is a therapist reacts, or cinema therapy. That's the name that he calls they call the channel now. It's basically cinema therapy is basically two guys on YouTube. It's a filmmaker and his best buddy, who's a therapist, and they're on a couch and they're watching a movie and they're analyzing the movie from a therapist's point of view. And what we're doing is roughly the same thing. We're taking our evidence, and then we're breaking it down and telling everybody, this is what we're discovering. This is what we're hearing. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see a reaction to it. And what we like about our approach to it is that instead of it being the constant, did you hear that? Kind of approach, we're doing it from, yeah, we heard that, we caught it. Now we're going to break it down and try to explain what it is.
Right.
And we not only show the clips of us, like talking about stuff that we can't explain, but we also, you know, in the first episode, we talk about debunking stuff because I was convinced that I saw an orb outside of the house, outside of the caretaker's house at Belgrove. I was convinced it was floating out there. And then I switched off my infrared mode, and sure enough, the orb disappeared. And I'm like, oh, I just learned something about infrared emitters. They reflect against glass. And that was, you know, that's what we're kind of showing. We want to show both the investigation as well as behind the scenes. So mm-hmm. you can see that we're approaching this from an analytical perspective.
And that makes all sorts of sense to me, because it is too easy for it to become something that is entirely woo-woo and does right. not have a foot in. It's like the star card in the tarot deck, one foot on the ground of being stable and centered and practical, and right. one foot in the water of being intuitive and creative and asking that imagine if question. So
right.
I'm very happy to hear that you were approaching it that way. And I'm excited to check out the show. I mean, I saw a rough cut of episode one, but I'm excited to see in 2 days, episode one of Old Spirits. T, I am super grateful that you took the time. And this is a new record for us. It's under 3 hours. Oh, my star.
How about that? We're getting better at this.
I know, right? But as always, I have my one last question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. And you've answered it twice already, but heck, let's try it for a trifecta. If you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
I think in light of the new thing, I'd probably have it write out. Give me a minute. Especially in light of Old Spirits, I guess I would just say believe. Believe. I think that can apply to so many different things. Whether you're a fan of Ted Lasso, or whether you're getting into paranormal investigation, I think believe is just a nice, easier word. It would take a while to skywrite it, but you know, I think that would be the one I would do. There's a lot of things you can do with drones now. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And you know, believe, I'm a huge Ted Lasso fan, but I also remember in Firefly Serenity, when Book says to Mal, I don't care what you believe as long as you believe in something. And yeah. I remember hearing that. That was right before he died. Yes, yep. It's a spoiler. Book dies in Serenity. But yeah, there's something really powerful about that statement. And it only makes sense that given what you are pursuing now, that it would be a state of mind that you would adhere to. T, as always, you are amazing and excellent, and I look forward to having you back again. Maybe in the autumn, we'll do even more. Maybe after you go on a few more investigations, or maybe when the next book comes out, whichever happens first. Until then, I thank you again for joining me on the show. You're fabulous.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on here, Isolde. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. You're welcome back anytime. As you can tell, this has been T. Morris and Isolde Trachtenberg on the Innovative Mindset podcast. If you're enjoying the show, do me a favor, drop me a line, leave a review, tell a friend, or buy me a coffee. All of that stuff is available on the show notes. I have links to all of T's socials and to oldspiritsinvestigations.com there too. If you want to check it out, definitely go check out the YouTube channel starting 2 days from now, because today is February 14th, happy Valentine's Day. Until next time, I remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2021. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.